international experiences.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Buonasera to everyone. My name is David Weiner. I'm an associate professor and Fulbright scholar from the LSU Ag Center in Baton Rouge. And I'm here to talk to you about my exchange that I had in Eastern Europe this past spring. So if you're unfamiliar with the Fulbright program, it's basically an exchange program administered by the U.S. Department of State and the Council for the International Exchange of Scholars. They facilitated the exchange of over 250,000 different scholars, teachers, and students in the U.S. and 140 participating countries. Now, there's several types of Fulbright grants. I participated in the traditional Fulbright Scholar Program, but there's also junior Fulbright awards and other things. You can have a teaching grant, a research grant, or a combination thereof, which is what mine was. Of the disciplines listed, there are 46 listed by name, and agriculture is one of those, but there are not a lot of agricultural Fulbrights that are awarded. The current catalog of awards has 543 awards open worldwide. Of those, 47 contained the keyword agriculture, and another 214 were open to all disciplines, including agriculture. Now, there's some pros and cons to applying for one of those all-discipline grants, and that is, in fact, what I applied to. It allows for people with highly specialized fields to apply to a country that they're interested in working in, but you're also competing against people from all sorts of different disciplines. So my agricultural Fulbright might have been evaluated against someone in music or history. And it's really difficult to kind of compare those. So those are some of the things that you have to face. The duration of the grant is variable, but it typically is around 4 to 8 months. Mine was 6 months, and they coincide with the academic term. Those of you who are interested in applying for a Fulbright, you need to start this application process early. The awards that they're currently soliciting are for the 2012-2013 year, and you need to identify your country of interest and what awards are available. What discipline? Do you want it to be teaching, research, these sorts of things? And develop a proposal tailored to meet the needs of the award. For the all-discipline awards, you need to structure the proposal to solve a problem that that country is facing and identify why you're wanting to select that country. You know, why is the research that you are going to do specifically applicable to that country? I also feel as though securing letters of support from the host university is really important. I did that, and I think it helped my candidacy. Now, for the Fulbright proposal, it generally contains these components: a project statement, the justification, the objectives, timeline and methods, a bibliography, as well as your professional CV, your proposed course syllabus if you're planning on teaching a course, letters of recommendation, and again, highlights of how your specific proposal will benefit the country of interest. You have to be patient. The review process takes a long time, typically up to a year. The first review is conducted in Washington, D.C. at the Fulbright Commission. Then if you make it past that stage, it goes to your host country, and their Fulbright Commission evaluates it. Upon completing that step, it comes back to Washington for a final approval, and my award notification came in May, and I was scheduled to start the following January. But some people started as early as August. Now, my award was in Cluj, Napoca, Romania, at the University of Agricultural Sciences and Veterinary Medicine. I had a 75% research appointment and 25% teaching. The course that I taught was entitled Soil Taxonomy and Land Management, a GIS-GPS Approach. And my research contained soil temperatures of the Transylvanian Plain in Romania. So you can see, upon arriving there, they had it right there on the front page, Un American, at USAMV. Now, preparing to go, there's lots of things that you have to consider. For those of you who are working at a university, who's going to teach your classes while you're away? I was lucky enough to have one of my doctoral candidates come and teach my course for me, and she did the whole thing, actually. Would your university consider your leave sabbatical, that is, paid leave or unpaid leave? I mean, these are really important considerations because we have a mortgage to pay every month, right? And you have to make sure you keep those things covered. What type of financial support would Fulbright support from both myself as well as my dependents? I was lucky enough to take my wife and my two children with me. Medical clearance, immunizations are required. You have to go and visit the doctor, not only the doctor, but the travel doctor who give you all those special shots. Evacuation insurance for emergencies, both medical as well as political. And one of the Fulbrighters in Romania had firsthand experience with that. His son was in Egypt when all the riots broke out, and he was evacuated from Egypt due to political circumstances, as well as visa requirements. And this can be, you know, tricky and certainly varies by country. Establishing contact with colleagues at your host university is really important, and they can help you with a lot of the logistics and logistical support. So soon after arriving in your host country, you're going to be directed to orientation at the Fulbright Commission. And most of the time, that's in the capital city. For us, it was in Bucharest. We'll have a comprehensive overview of the exchange expectations, security issues, cultural sensitivity, upcoming meetings which you might want to attend, and a meet and greet with other Fulbrighters who are there from a bunch of different countries. A list of do's and don'ts in your home country. And also you get to meet your U.S. Embassy contacts, which can handle anything that you might need. It's your home away from home. Well, banking was rather interesting there. Fulbright gave me two types of support, the first of which was a lump sum payment. The reason I'm telling you all this is I was sitting in those chairs about 2 or 3 years ago, and I really wanted to know the answers to all these, and nobody gave me those answers. I'll just tell you, up front, we got a lump sum payment, $20,000. And this was to cover our airline tickets, relocation, shipping books, first month's rent, anything like that that I needed to get a hold of. Then we received a monthly stipend for rent and living expenses, but the requirement was this had to be deposited into a Romanian bank account. They didn't want the money to leave the country. So I had to open a bank account in Romania at BRD, and they deposited 6,620 lei, which is the equivalent of about $2,200 a month. Unlike your payroll here that you're probably on, where it goes in on the first of the month without pause, Romania, it was much more variable. We'll get that money to you. It'll be coming. It's on the way. I know it's supposed to be there the 20th, but it wasn't always there on the 20th. The living arrangements we had were basic but adequate. We lived in a small flat with 3 rooms, no beds. We slept on pull-out sofas for 6 months, and so it was basic. We did go ahead and get a car. We rented it from a private citizen. Fuel there was $6 per gallon. And we also had to pay this Rovinieta pass, which is like a toll road, only it covers all roads outside the city. And so it was rather interesting. But they do have a lot of good other options, train, tram, bus, taxi, or even air travel. Well, you have to be open to new culture, new way of doing things. In Romania, there's generally a lack of planning and forethought in everything they do. This is pervasive throughout their entire society. I mean, I'm talking about ordering enough juice to have at the store to the way you hang electrical wires on poles. Everything is just chaotic there, okay? The pricing structure is considerably different. Fuel, very expensive. Cell phones and internet were very cheap. Of course, the internet didn't work when it was raining outside. We went to Romanian basketball national championship. It's $5 a seat. You know, you bet you can't get Spurs tickets for that. But there was a genuine kindness and friendliness towards visitors and a deeply entrenched cultural heritage there that we were very appreciative of. It was easier for some Romanians to consider new ideas that we were bringing than others. There's certainly different social structures and different values in the United States. And the reason I'm mentioning all this is I had to consider all of this when I walk into the classroom and teach these students. Business affairs there were rigid and bureaucratic. Everything you needed done required a stamp. Okay. The language barrier was not too much of a problem. I don't speak Romanian. I can tell you Buna Dimineața or, you know, Mulțumesc. But most of the younger people there, 20 or 30-ish, spoke at least some English. Certainly most of the people around the university did. We worked to learn some basic phrases in Romanian to help us along. And Google Translate was fantastic for any kind of electronic documentation that we needed. We also networked with a lot of other expatriates, and they helped us kind of work our way through the community. University folks, the school that my children attended, Scoala Internaționale, the International School of Cluj, International Church of Cluj that we went to. We met a lot of English speakers there, and even my wife was in a women's group of international folks, and it was great. Well, the research that I conducted, I'm a soil scientist by training, and I looked at soil temperatures on the Transylvanian Plain. We pulled soil cores and started when it was very cold. The top 18 inches of the soil were completely frozen. And also had a separate study that we initiated on a specific hill in Caianu, Romania, looking at aspect and inclination differences in this particular area. One of the most rewarding things I got to do is a Chernozem study, differentiating these from Phaeozems, with the author of Romanian soil taxonomy, Dr. Nicola Floria, and he's about 92 years old and came up from Bucharest and went to the field with us. Really remarkable man. Here's some of the work that we did in the field. Some of the facilities here at the university, they do have access to modern instrumentation, but mostly the instrumentation was not available to the students. This was only for use by the faculty. So you still see a lot of chalk on board there rather than PowerPoint, and a lot of their chemistry is done by titration, wet chemistry methods, as opposed to newer instrumentation that we would be familiar with here. This is a dormitory that I've stayed in many times when I've been to Romania. Well, let me tell you a bit about the teaching. This is the course that I taught. I had 24 master's level students, one lecture, 2-hour lecture per week. We used ArcGIS 9.3, which I brought with me. We installed that on their computers. I offered some quizzes, this major semester-long project, and a final exam, of which they told me that the common practice there is to give an oral exam of 10 questions, which is a little different for me. I'm normally given a written exam, but okay, one in Rome, right? One of the things that I spent a lot of time in was translating all of my slides into Romanian, and I did this with the assistance of 2 doctoral students. And you can imagine your collection of PowerPoint slides that you have for a semester translating each slide into a foreign language. And so I would give it to the Romanians. They'd translate it into Romanian. Then I'd come back and add the English back on top, and I had to redo the spacing and the figures and all of that on all the slides. But this is what I lectured with every day, side by side. You had the English and the Romanian. So even the students in the class who didn't speak English so well saw the content in their native language. Unfortunately, the teaching was the most disappointing aspect. I had fire in the belly. I was ready to go and change the world, and it didn't happen that way. On any given day, more than half the class would skip. Okay, and these are graduate students. They didn't complete assignments that I gave them. They wouldn't come by and ask for help. Only 6 out of 24 students came to take the final exam. The rest just skipped it. So the final course scores that I gave were 2 C's, 3 D's, and 19 F's. And throughout the semester, I pleaded with the administration, the dean and the rector, telling them about these problems, and they would just kind of slump down in their chair. I'm sorry, you know, wish we could have gotten you some better students. They didn't have any real passion to improve things. So this really highlighted the difference that they have there in the way they approach teaching. You know, class attendance is truly optional. I had one student that was living in a foreign country the entire semester he was registered for my class. Faculty are expected to find a way for their students to pass. They can retake the final exam as many times as they want until they pass the course. Passing is 50%, and for most courses, only the final exam is considered for the grade. The associate dean said, we typically ask students 5 oral questions, but if they don't know those, you can ask them more until they pass. Okay? That's the kind of mentality I fought. I gave some special seminars while I was there. Also gave a guest lecture at Babesh Boyle University in the Faculty of Geography. Had the opportunity to attend several different meetings in lots of different countries. Visited 8 different countries in all while we were there for 6 months. And even though my Fulbright experience has concluded, I'm still actively involved through collaborations I've developed, friendships, review of Fulbright proposals for the Romanian Fulbright Commission, and I'm working on future opportunities as well. I would like to host a Fulbright scholar from Romania at the LSU Ag Center in Baton Rouge, and I'm working with a colleague there to facilitate that. So with that, I would wrap up and say, mulțumesc, thank you, and ask for any questions you might have.
Okay. So very good. So any questions for David?
Yes, Eugene. Okay.
Isn't it possible that the... answer questions on the exams are the purposes to teach the material that they master, and if they cannot get the correct answer, to make some provision to keep doing it until they get the correct answer in different ways, so they can look at the solution. The whole purpose is, I know that they can't answer the question, they fail, but in some courses I've taken, they go ahead and they keep teaching you different ways of looking at it until you understand it. Then you are an educated person in that particular item.
I think that's an excellent point, and I think beyond that it would help to teach them even more if they came to class. Well, but the simple fact is, if they don't come to class, I can't teach them. And if they won't come by my office and say, hey, I'm not understanding this, you know, and I went so far with the final exam as to offer translation assistance. I arranged for someone to come and explain the questions to them in Romanian just to make sure that they're understanding what's being asked of them. But we've got to have them in class, you know, taking notes and actively engaged if they hope to learn anything.